And now for something completely different.
This is the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Let's do it.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. With you till 3 on this Wednesday as we help you get over the hump and towards the weekend with plenty to do over the next few hours. Coming up, are the Atlanta Braves ever going to lose again? Plus, Clemson has their new baseball coach. Deshaun Watson spoke to the media yesterday for the first time in 3 months. We'll get to some of that audio. Why the Carolina Panthers need to stop playing this game of chicken. Plus, we get ready for the LIV Golf Tour, the PGA Tour, to collide this weekend. We'll talk golf with Jeremy Schilling an hour from now. Dark horse candidates in college football. Plus, how do you get dressed in the morning? And a whole lot more over the next few hours. With it till 3 on this Wednesday, you can join the conversation throughout. 843-721-9500 to give us a call. You can always text the show. 843-608-1734. Get to us on Twitter at Morrow Middays. On Facebook at ESPN Charleston. Via email, studio at KirkmanBroadcasting.com. Or online at CharlestonSportsRadio.com. Head over there and click on our show page, where you can leave a comment for the show. You can find the latest versions of the show podcasted right there, or you can even take the Morrow Midday Show with you wherever you go by simply streaming us online at charlestonsportsradio.com. With you till 3, Trent's on the steel wheels. Trent, what's going on? How are you?
Luke, I'm doing phenomenal. We got the NHL Stanley Cup Game 1 tonight. Here we go. It's absolutely phenomenal. Who's going to win Lord Stanley's Cup? I'm incredibly excited to see. I finished up Peaky Blinders last night. It was absolutely phenomenal. Are you kidding me? And I can't wait till the movie releases. I'm feeling good. It's a beautiful Wednesday here in the Lowcountry. It's hot as all get out, but we're here. We're ready to go on the Morrow Midday Show.
Absolutely. Were any tears shed last night?
No tears were shed. But, you know, Luke, when you're sitting there, like, it's like watching Marley and Me, and your eyes get a little watery, you know what I'm saying? Any dog movies, I always get a little watery. But, yeah, you know, tears could have flown, but I don't know if I was in the correct state of mind to have some tears. Actually, I wasn't too emotional last night. I could have been, but I wasn't too emotional.
Okay, so now we wait on the movie, right? That's the next step?
We wait on the movie, right? Yeah, I think that's the next step.
All right. Is it going to be a while, or do they already have it like made and waiting to release it?
Definitely going to be a while. It's going to be like Ozark when season 3 ended and we waited, you know, 2.5-3 years until the next season comes out. But I'm feeling good, Luke. Glad to be here with you, sir.
See, that's the problem with these streaming shows. That's what I always say. At least when you used to watch TV, like you used to watch Seinfeld every Thursday night, it would suck to have to wait each week for the new episode.
Right.
But it would take you, you know, whatever, 7 months to get through it. Maybe even more. Then you just have to wait till the summer. You get through the summer reruns. You're busy in the summer anyways. And then it's just back on in September anyways.
Boom.
Now with the streaming shows, you go through them in one weekend. And it's like, all right, now what? Now I got to wait 18 months for the new series, the next season. So that's a bit of a pain.
You it's a crime.
Burn through them. And then, you know, they can't keep up. They can't produce the shows as fast as we watch them. So then you got to wait. We'll see what happens. People are waiting for that Sopranos movie for years. And then James Gandolfini passed away, and they came out with it finally a year ago, and it was a prequel. So for all you Peaky Blinder fans, we'll see when we get that movie. And maybe I'll, at some point, dive into the show. Let me start with this. Let's talk a little baseball to begin this Wednesday. Stanley Cup begins tonight. NBA Finals resume tomorrow night. We don't do a whole lot of Major League Baseball this time of year because it's June 15th. It's a long season. Last year, at this time, the Braves were 5 games under 500. They were in third place. They were 8 games behind the Mets. Who won the World Series? The Braves. Who finished in third place? The Mets. So I don't really pay a whole ton of it. We're not going to break down game by game in June. There's a lot of baseball season left to be played. But the Atlanta Braves have won 13 straight games, longest winning streak for them in over 20 years. Beat up on the Nationals again last night. Offense is hot, leading the league in home runs during this stretch. Team ERA is good. Everybody's clicking. Braves are playing good baseball. Looks like that team that got hot in October last year on the way to the World Series. I don't want to be a wet blanket, but I still have questions about the Braves team. I'm still curious about which direction they'll go. Now, I do believe Atlanta will hang around in the NL East. I think this will be an interesting summer. They've already closed the gap with the Mets. The Mets are one of those teams that are always hard to trust, and I think things could tighten up even more in the National League East. We could be in for an interesting summer. But with the Braves winning 13 straight, I don't know how much I can take away from this streak. Now, look, it's hard to win night in and night out. It's not to take everything or anything away from this winning streak. Even when you play bad teams, you still got to go out there, execute, and beat them. And good teams beat the teams they're supposed to. That's what the Braves are doing. But 13 straight wins, all 13 have come against teams with losing records. They haven't beaten a good team during this winning streak. They should beat the Nationals today, but the real test will be next week when you welcome in the Giants, the Dodgers, and then even the Phillies who are playing better baseball. And that will be a real sign of what we have with this Braves team. They started off the season terribly. Now they've gotten hot. They've done it against a weak part of their schedule, which, hey, good on them. Take advantage of the bad teams when you get to play them. Build a winning streak. Build some confidence. Sometimes that's all it takes. Guys are hitting better now. Obviously, they didn't have Acuna early in the year. Now Albies is injured. But for the Braves, 13 straight wins against 13 teams under 500. I still have questions. This year, they're under 500 against teams with winning records. If you want to compare that to the Mets, who are in first place, the Mets this year are the best team in the league against teams with winning records, 24 and 14. They have twice as many of those wins against the as compared to the Braves. They have played 12 more games against teams with winning records than the Braves. The Braves are under 500 against teams with winning records. They're 24 and 13 against losing teams. That's who they've dominated this year. So they still, even with 13 straight wins, need to show me something. They'll have a chance to show it to me next week. They are playing better now than early in the year. They are the defending World Series champs. I expect them to be competing with the Mets for that division until the end of the season. But when I look at these two teams right now, right, the Mets have one of the best records in baseball. They're doing it without their two aces. They've had some injuries in the lineup, and they're beating good teams along the way. When I look at the Braves, a little more hollow on the record. They've beaten up on a bunch of bad teams. By the way, over the past 5 weeks, best records in baseball, in order, Yankees, Red Sox, Braves, Mets. The four biggest brands in the Northeast leading the way over the past 5 weeks in Major League Baseball, best records in baseball. The AL East is similar. The Yankees and the Red Sox have also taken advantage of some easy stretches on their schedule. Things are going to get a little bit harder for them this summer. The Mets and the Braves have taken advantage of an easier part of their schedule. The Mets, meanwhile, have been beating some good teams, doing it without their best pitchers. So the Mets should still be pretty pleased being in first place with about a five-game lead over Atlanta. The Braves are surging back. They've won 13 in a row. I don't know if they're going to lose again. But we'll get a real answer on this Atlanta Braves team, what we have here, next week when they play three good teams, albeit at home next week, in a big test. Right against the Giants, the Dodgers, the Phillies, that's where things will really get interesting. Not in beating the Rockies and the Nationals and the Pirates, whoever else they've been playing in this winning streak, a bunch of lousy teams. We'll see what they can do against some of the other good teams of the National League starting next week. Let me shift to this. Speaking of baseball, Clemson has their new coach, Eric Backage, the coach from Michigan. Looks like he's going to be hired and introduced as the head baseball coach of Clemson today. I think there are a couple of reasons why. Number one, money. Money talks. Ask the LIV golfers. Right, Backage is reportedly being offered more than $1 million. Pretty good payday. Number two reason, potentially, maybe because his first coaching job was with Clemson. He was the volunteer assistant 20 years ago. It was his first job coaching college baseball. He also played in North Carolina, so you know he played some of his college ball not far. But the third reason why, maybe even more important than the other two, is because he has a chance now to come south. The SEC has taken over college baseball. It could be the first conference in 50 years to have a team in the national title game four straight years. This year, when you look at the playoff field in college baseball, the SEC had the most teams in the field with 9, tied with the ACC, also at 9. So the ACC and the SEC had 18 playoff teams. The talent is here in the southeast portion of the country. Now, Backus did a really good job at Michigan. He's regarded as one of the better coaches in the country. He seems like a great hire for Clemson. And he got Michigan to the 2019 national title game. I remember talking about it at the time. They lost to Vanderbilt, though. Vanderbilt, a southern school, right out of the SEC. And it was the first title game appearance for Michigan that they've had. Not even when Barry Larkin was there could they make it to the national championship. However, since that 2019 appearance, they're barely over 500 since. They had that great year, made the run to the national title. It's been hard to try to duplicate that success. This year, they finished fifth in the Big Ten, had an ERA over 7. Speaking of the Big Ten, this year they managed only two tournament teams, and only one of them was at large. The other was Michigan because they surprised a lot of people and won their conference tournament. So they got a bid into the tournament this year. Iowa had a good year, won almost 40 games. They were left out. Rutgers set a record for most wins, also scored the most runs in the country, left out of the tournament. The Big Ten has not had a national champion since Ohio State in 1966. The only other team that we could say, maybe, cold area, I don't know, Wichita, Kansas. How cold does it get there? Wichita State is the only other team that maybe you could say comes from a colder climate and has won a baseball national championship since 1966. And they did it in the 80s. So certainly nobody has done it in over 30 years. And maybe one, maybe half a team, we give them half credit, half a team has come from a colder climate to win a championship in college baseball over the past 55 years. It doesn't happen. Despite 80% of college baseball teams playing north of the Mason-Dixon line, 0% of the championships are actually won by those teams. Half of the final eight teams this year in college baseball are from one division in the SEC. The best team in college baseball this year, Tennessee, won't be there in the final eight, but they too are from the SEC. College baseball is all about the southern teams and the West Coast teams. It's not about the North or Northeast. How often do you see those teams competing for national championships? UConn got close to making it to the final eight this year. They came up a little bit short. It would have been their first time ever, or first time since the 70s. Right, those teams have to spend half of the year in the South, first half of the year. They start on the longest road trip in baseball. They can't practice outdoors for half of the year. You're practicing in indoor facilities, not on your actual field that you'll be playing games on. Southern teams get more fans at the game, therefore making more money. Michigan, this past baseball season, played only 23 of their 62 games at home. About a third of their season at home, two-thirds on the road. We saw Mario Cristobal leave Oregon to come back to the South to coach college football. Brian Kelly left up north to come down south to coach college football. We know the best football is in the warmer climates as well, certainly this part of the country. And same idea with baseball. 90% of the teams to reach the College World Series over the years are from 14 states. All 14 states are either on the West Coast or the southeast part of the country. Or southern part, right? Include Texas. So you could draw a border from the west, swinging all the way around towards us here on this side of the country. Those are your states that produce 90% of the teams that make it to the College World Series. The talent is in the South. The better teams are in the South. The SEC has become the best conference in college baseball, but the ACC, they're pretty good too, right? This state has a high expectation for college baseball for a reason. So Backus, yeah, they threw a lot of money at him. That's pretty good. Gets to return to Clemson where he spent 1 year. I don't know how important that is to him. But also gets to come down and work in the South. The sport is controlled by just a handful of states. If you want to win, you got to be in one of those states. He now is. South Carolina is one of those states. We've seen the Gamecocks do it not long ago. You have to be in a warm climate to win in college baseball. He now is leading Clemson. Looks like a good hire for the Tigers. Which takes me to this, right? The difference between Clemson and South Carolina, because I know a lot of Gamecock fans are very unhappy with their baseball program. They probably see this move from Clemson, throwing over $1 million at one of the, what's regarded one of the better coaches in the country, thinking, why can't we do that? Why are we sticking with Mark Kingston? Well, of course, it comes down to money. Clemson can afford to offer him over $1 million because they haven't had to pay a buyout for one of their other coaches in quite some time. South Carolina, meanwhile, has still like a $13 million price tag on Will Muschamp. They're now paying Frank Martin. And if you move on from Mark Kingston, you're going to have to pay his buyout as well. Can't do it. For Clemson, their football coach has been their football coach for about 15 years. Their basketball coach has been their basketball coach for about 12 years. And they finally made a change in baseball after 7 years. they got some money stored up to be able to throw it at a good coach. That's the difference. All right, when you fail in other areas, it's going to catch up to you, unfortunately. If you work for a company that is largely dependent on sales, you may not have anything to do with sales. It can still impact how much money you make depending on how well the sales team does, how much money they're bringing in. It has nothing to do with you, right? Another portion of the company may not be holding up their end of the bargain. It affects you. For South Carolina, when the football coach, basketball coach isn't good enough, you have to fire them, pay the buyout. Well, that affects what you can do with the baseball program. You only have so much money in the bank that you can use. For Clemson, say what you want about Brad Brunell, but he's at least been successful enough to keep his job. And so from the money saved with the football program, with the basketball program, not having to change coaches, pay buyouts, they can afford to spend some money on the baseball program. And right now, Clemson has a leg up. They get a head start on South Carolina with these two trying to turn around their programs. Which takes me to this. Landon Powell, who just won a national championship with North Greenville, he was the name I said a couple of weeks ago, right, that if South Carolina were to make a move, Landon's got to be the guy you turn to. Then he followed up winning a national championship at North Greenville, the Division II national title. Here he was on the Fan Upstate talking about his interest in one day becoming the head coach of his alma mater, South Carolina.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, obviously I'm a person that's very happy where my feet are, and I always want to try to be that way. So I love North Greenville. I love these players. I poured a lot into this place the last 7 years, and I'm sitting here today hugging players goodbye for the summer and talking about our plans for next year, and, you know, really excited to see these guys show back up in August. So it's hard to think about not being here. At the same time, I've always had a consistent position. It's never been a secret. The one school that I would leave North Greenville for would be my alma mater. You know, I'm a Gamecock. I believe Garnet. I spent 4 years there. That university shaped me as a person. I accomplished, along with my teammates and my coaches, we accomplished some great things. We broke the door down for Coach Tanner and got him to Omaha for the first time, played for a national championship, won SEC championships. We did some cool stuff. When I graduated to South Carolina, I had been part of more wins in a Gamecock uniform than any athlete in school history. And I'm proud of that. And so if I ever had the opportunity to go back there and coach there and make an impact on that university and pay forward what that university did for me, I would do it in a heartbeat. Like, just, I've always said that. But I'm not chasing that, to be clear, Mark.
Sure.
Like, I'm not chasing that. I'm not pursuing that. That opportunity, if it ever comes my way, it'll come my way. Like, if it's meant to be, it's meant to be. I'm a man of faith. I believe God has a plan, and whenever, you know, if that's a door that He wants to open for me, then He'll open it. If He doesn't, I'm going to be happy where my feet are. I'm going to make an impact wherever I'm at. I also want to make it clear that I have Mark Kingston's back. I fully support him as the coach of that program. I believe in him. I think that he can turn it around. I know that he's been bit by the injury bug some here in the last couple of years. You know, I want that program back to the excellence that it was. My teammates and guys that I played with, we all want nothing but success for that program. And therefore, like, Mark Kingston is the guy that we have. You know, we need him to turn it around, and I believe he will, and I hope he will. So that's my answer to that, and I mean that wholeheartedly. Like, you know, I hope he turns it around and goes and wins 4 or 5 national championships the next 10 years, and then maybe he retires and rides off in the sunset, and then maybe then that's my time. Or maybe I never get a call to go back to Columbia, and that's okay too. But that is the one place that I would leave North Greenville to go.
Landon Powell talking about his alma mater. The Gamecocks are the one school he'd be willing to leave North Greenville to go coach. The good news is, as he said, right, he'll be waiting around. He'll be waiting for that call whenever it may come. If he stays true to his word and he's not leaving North Greenville unless it's for the Gamecocks, then he'll be there waiting for you. Until one day you get that Dear John letter and he's moved on to somebody else because you were just taking too long. But Landon Powell, I think, would be the guy that could turn around the Gamecocks and get that program back where you want it to be. And he could also be like Mike Young. I remember saying at the time, if you're Clemson, this is the time to make a change with the basketball program. Mike Young's in the backyard. He's going to get scooped up by somebody else. If you wait too long, he is the guy. And I think he's doing a pretty good job at Virginia Tech. And I think the outlook for Virginia Tech looks better than Clemson right now in basketball. And you let him get away. Same idea for South Carolina. Can't make a move this year because of financial reasons? Okay. Just make sure you don't allow Landon Powell to get away. He's done an incredible job at North Greenville. I think he could do a good job in a program in the SEC as well. It reminds me a little bit of like the 1960 New York Giants. New York football Giants. Let's go way back. The Giants had Vince Lombardi as their offensive coordinator. They had Tom Landry as their defensive coordinator. What an incredible coaching staff. But they had no idea what they had. And they let Vince Lombardi go become the head coach of the Packers. I think he did okay. And they let Tom Landry go become the head coach of the Cowboys. I think he did all right. I think I've heard that name before. And the Giants instead hired Allie Sherman, who never won a playoff game with the Giants. And obviously, far less successful than Lombardi and Tom Landry. And my point being, right, don't let the good talent slip away. The New York Giants had Lombardi and Landry on their staff. They had to hire a new coach, and they said, nah, we don't want either one of these guys. They can go on to other teams. And they brought in Allie Sherman. Did not work out great for the Giants in the 60s. Clemson had Mike Young in the backyard getting ready to be scooped up by a bigger program. They said, nah, we're good. We're fine. I think Mike Young will do better things at Virginia Tech than whatever Clemson accomplishes in the meantime. And for South Carolina, I get it. Hands are tied financially. But if you were to let Landon Powell slip away, I think that'd be someone similar. He's right there in the backyard. He played there. That's the one school he says he wants to coach at. He tried to get an assistant job with you a year ago. Don't let him eventually get away either. I think Clemson made a good hire on paper. You never know how these things are going to work out. But on paper, it seems like they brought in a good coach with Eric Backage today. And it's for South Carolina, if they want to make some sort of move eventually to try to turn around their program, I still think Landon Powell will be the guy. Don't let Vince Lombardi and Tom Landry out your building. And don't let Mike Young out of your backyard or Landon Powell either. Coming up, Deshaun Watson spoke to the media yesterday for the first time in 3 months and, of course, was peppered with questions not about reading his zone defense, but instead his off-the-field issues. We'll get to that audio when we come back. More Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Now back to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Coming up, Deshaun Watson spoke with the media for the first time in 3 months. We'll get to some of his responses yesterday as Browns minicamp began. Open the show talking some baseball. The Atlanta Braves on this 13-game winning streak. And I remember like the Oakland A's 20 years ago won 20 straight and then still didn't do anything that year. And they set a record for like the longest winning streak. It is remarkable when you can baseball can be so tough. As they say, your momentum's only as good as your next day's starting pitcher. You win 13 straight. I don't care who you're playing. It's impressive. But my questions are still, is this the Braves coming around to the October version of a year ago, or is this beating up on a bunch of bad teams? I think we get the answer next week when they take on the Giants, Dodgers, and then Phillies as well. Just like the Yankees begin a stretch here of two straight weeks against teams with winning records for the first time. Started off with a win yesterday. Right, and this is when you find out how good these teams truly are. The Yankees right now, the Braves next week, we'll get a real sense. Clemson hired their new baseball coach, talked about that. But Deshaun Watson yesterday spoke with the media for the first time in quite some time and, of course, was peppered with questions about his legal situation. Let's get through some of these clips. I'll give you any sort of takeaways from what Deshaun had to say yesterday. Beginning with just general general statement, essentially, from Deshaun when he was first asked about these allegations against him by now all these women, the 26 lawsuits. Here's what Deshaun had to say yesterday.
Never assaulted anyone, or I never harassed anyone, or I never disrespected anyone, or I never forced anyone to do anything. I've been honest and I've been truthful about my stance, and that's, you know, I never forced anyone, I never assaulted anyone. So that's what, you know, I've been saying it from the beginning, and I'm going to continue to do that. And until all the facts come out on the legal side, I have to continue to just, you know, go with the process with my legal team and you know, the court of law.
That was Deshaun Watson yesterday. All right, pretty open and shut case there, at least from him. Still denying everything, leaving no wiggle room. My follow-up, if I was there, would be, then how come you sent a text message to the one therapist apologizing if you felt like you've never done anything wrong? But nonetheless, another clip from Deshaun yesterday was this was him talking about the idea of, you know, like clearing his name. His reputation. Here's more of what Deshaun had to say yesterday.
I go each and every day focusing on my tasks and being the best person I can be. I can't control what, you know, the other side is doing with the legal process. But like I said before, I just got to continue to just focus on being the best Deshaun Watson I can be for this organization.
More from Deshaun yesterday. Somebody asked him about the New York Times report that we discussed on the show last week, where they detailed meetings with 66 different massage therapists, quote-unquote, over a 17-month period. Deshaun was asked about that. Here's what he had to say in regards to that question yesterday.
Does that number 66 seem right to you?
I mean, I can answer that. I don't think so, for what me and my attorneys went through. But at the same time, you know, that's more of a legal question that I can't really get into details about. So you'll probably have to ask my attorneys and things like that to confirm.
Not really a firm answer. I would know if I met with 66 massage therapists over 17 months or not. Instead of saying, hey, you're going to have to ask my legal folks. I would say, no, right? If it didn't happen? No, of course, that's crazy. 66? Why would I do that? And if you have to think about it, that means it's a high number. Maybe it's not 66, but it's really 55, right? But if it's only 20 and they're claiming 66, you know you didn't meet with 66 massage therapists over 17 months. You'd come out and say, no, that's a ridiculous number. Why would I ever do that? Instead of, I don't think so. You'd have to ask my lawyers. The non-answer is kind of an answer. Here was Deshaun Watson when asked about if he had any sort of regrets from the past few months. Here's what he had to say yesterday.
I think that question kind of, you know, triggered a lot of people, not just women in general, but a lot of people from this, you know, in the lead, from women to males and things like that. And what I was saying is, yes, I never assaulted, disrespected, or harassed anyone. But at the same time, I do understand that I do have regrets as far as the impact that it's have on the community and people outside of just myself. You know, and that includes my family, that includes this organization, that includes my teammates in this locker room that have to answer to these questions, that includes, you know, the fan base of the Cleveland Browns, that includes males, females, everyone across the world, you know. So that's one thing I do regret, is the impact that it's have triggered on so many people. And, it's tough to have to, you know, do it.
I've listened to that clip a couple of times. I honestly don't really get what he's saying in that one. It's almost like a passive-aggressive apology, almost. Like, I'm sorry you feel that way. Right? I don't think I did anything wrong. I'm sorry you feel like that way. I don't really get what he's saying about putting his teammates in a bad spot and women being triggered. And I guess just because of the accusations, he regrets just having this situation come about and his teammates having to answer questions and women out there that have gone through something similar having to hear about it. I don't really know. I will say in that clip, he reiterates that he never disrespected or harassed somebody. See, that's a tricky one. Now, Deshaun may very well feel that way, but a woman could feel differently. Just like you in your own life may feel like, I never disrespected or harassed a woman, but maybe there was some time in your life where, right, the woman on the other side feels a little bit different, and it was just what you thought was a harmless comment. So that one's a little tricky, and that's kind of the tricky part in cases like this, where one side may see it a certain way, and the other side, because it's almost about, in some cases, it's almost about feelings. So you may feel a certain way about how things went down, and the other person may feel a little bit different, like they were coerced into something, or they were forced to do something, or they were, you know, they did something against their will. And you may not have that same perspective because you're not really in their shoes or in their body. So that's a tricky one when you say, I've never disrespected or harassed somebody. I'm sure Deshaun feels that way, but by saying that, and I'm sure this is from the, this is the legal advice from his team and maybe even PR from the Browns to say certain buzzwords and phrases, but you leave really no wiggle room in a statement like that when you could say something along the lines of show a little more remorse where you say, I never meant to do anything. Seeing as disrespect, I'm sorry if somebody took it that way. I don't believe I did anything wrong. Something more like that instead of, no, I never disrespected, harassed anybody. I haven't done anything wrong. And I think that's what has also annoyed some of the women, as well as more have come out the longer this has gone on. Here's the last clip from Deshaun in the press conference yesterday. Asked about working with the NFL in their investigation as we still wait from some sort of announcement from Goodell and the NFL. Here's what Deshaun said yesterday.
met with the NFL a couple weeks ago, and I did everything they asked me to do. I answered every question truthfully that the NFL asked me. I spent hours with the people that they brought down, and that's all I can do is just tell them and be honest and tell them exactly what happened. And I know they have a job, and so I have to respect that, and that's what we want to do is cooperate. And, you know, they have to make a decision best for the league, you know, so.
Yeah, I think that's an important phrase there said at the end. Make a decision that's best for the league. That's what this all comes down to. That's the crux of this from the NFL. What's best for the league? That's why I've been saying for weeks that I don't like the idea. If I'm Roger Goodell, I do not like the idea of opening up the paper or turning on ESPN and have videos of Deshaun being out on the field. I think that rubs a lot of people the wrong way. I don't think it's a good look optically for the NFL. And the season begins, right? We still have about 3 months. So why not have him sit aside and buy yourself a little bit more time until the start of the season and make a decision? You could tell me, well, it's not very fair for the Browns to not have their starting quarterback. Okay, well, then maybe they shouldn't have brought in somebody with 22 open lawsuits against them when they signed him or traded for him and gave him that huge contract. Right, this is kind of the risk you were running. So you're going to miss all the offseason, right, if he's cleared. If the NFL is able to clear his name by the start of the season, say, okay, you can go play week one. But I do not like the idea of him going through the training camp and practices and still waiting on some sort of answer. But as Deshaun said, they have to make a decision that's best for the league. That's the important part. Look, Ben Roethlisberger got suspended. He did not get in trouble with the law, but he put himself in a bad spot, made the league look bad. A story about him out at a bar with a girl in a bathroom and he's a married man and his wife's at home. It's like, yeah, you know, this wasn't a good look. You're not making the NFL look good. Ezekiel Elliott got suspended, did not get in trouble with the law, but there's a video of him pulling down women's tops at Mardi Gras. And Roger Goodell looked at that and said, yeah, you know what, you're not really making us look good. There's video of you out at a parade pulling women's clothes off. They suspended Ezekiel Elliott. There's a couple of other things as well. They suspended Adrian Peterson for a whole year. Didn't get in trouble with the law, but, you know, he disciplined his kid with a switch. Roger Goodell said, yeah, this is not a good look for us. I don't want one of my employees making headlines like this. And that's why I've been so perplexed with the Deshaun case, that those other examples I just gave you, they didn't have any criminal charges. They didn't get arrested. They didn't spend time in jail. None of that. There weren't even 24 lawsuits. But they did something that made the NFL look bad. It's the player conduct part of the CBA. You don't need to get in trouble with the law in order to get in trouble with your employer when it comes to the NFL. You just make them look bad, they're going to punish you for doing so. And regardless of how you feel about Deshaun, you may think Deshaun did nothing illegal. We don't know. Maybe he didn't. Right? But when you got a girlfriend at home and you're going out to meet with 66 different massage therapists that you meet on Instagram, and even if it was all consensual, going out to search for happy endings or to try to have consensual sex with these random women on Instagram, how many other quarterbacks have we heard stories about this in the league? Which has been my point all along. I don't care if he did anything legal or illegal at this point. When it comes to the NFL, if I'm Roger Goodell, like, I'm not waiting to see what happens. Is he going to be punished is he going to lose these lawsuits? I don't care. He's made you look bad. This has been the number one story this offseason. And even if it was all consensual, right, going around DMing women on Instagram to come over, massage you, and, like, hook up with you, 66 different women in 17 months. Look, we can all have different opinions about what you do in your personal life. I'm not even some sort of prude. But if I'm Roger Goodell, I'm thinking this is one of my young star quarterbacks going out and doing this. A lot of people are upset. Doesn't really make us look good. And there should be some sort of punishment for that. Just like Ben Roethlisberger, Adrian Peterson, Ezekiel Elliott, these were guys that did things that maybe ethically were deemed incorrect and got punished. And I think there's enough people out there to believe what Deshaun Watson has done ethically, right, is enough to also get punished. And I'll say this once again. I've repeated it a couple times, right? You can always give out a harder discipline and peel it back. It's always easier to take away punishment than add on punishment. And you still have 3 months till the start of the season. So if I'm Goodell, I'm saying, all right, that's it. Step aside. Hopefully we get some more clarity over the next 3 months. And even if Deshaun were to miss some games this year, and then it turns out, like, actually, he's cleared of any wrongdoing. Well, as I just laid out, I still don't think he put himself in a great position. If you put yourself in a position to be sued by 24 different women, you're probably not making the smartest decisions. And in the NFL, that's all it takes to get punished. Ben Roethlisberger, we don't know if he did something illegally wrong or not, but he made a dumb decision. Adrian Peterson, probably made a dumb decision. Ezekiel Elliott pulling down women's tops, probably a dumb decision. And they got punished for it. Deshaun, whether it's all consensual and legal, probably made a dumb decision to be DMing strangers and reportedly flying them in to get massages and hook up with them and 66 women in 17 months. Charlie Sheen got fired from Two and a Half Men for doing something similar. Right? Probably making a bad decision, whether you did something illegal or not. I don't know if that's what you want one of your employees doing to represent your organization. But we'll continue to wait on what the NFL determines. Deshaun Watson speaking to the media for the first time yesterday in quite a while. When we come back, along those lines, Baker Mayfield, meanwhile, is still sitting in the backdrop waiting for whatever's going to happen. When we come back, I'm going to combine two things. Number one, it's time for the Panthers and even the Browns to stop playing some sort of game of chicken. And number two, we'll get to one of the worst takes of the week that I've heard. And I'll combine the two when we come back. It's the More Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention campers, lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Morrow Midday Show. With the
It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Coming up, the Panthers and Browns should just stop playing some sort of game of chicken with Baker Mayfield. And I'll tie it to some comments made in regards to the NBA Finals the other night, which I thought was really a pretty awful take. In fact, let's do that first. Here was Brian Windhorst. He went on SportsCenter with Scott Van Pelt after the Warriors win the other night in Game 5 of the NBA Finals. I missed this. I saw this clip on the interwebs yesterday and did not agree. Here was what Windhorst said after the Warriors won Game 5 the other night.
Andrew Wiggins, he's not an underdog. He makes $32 million. While the Warriors were down these last couple of years, winning no games, they kept spending money because they've got it. They re-signed Draymond Green. They re-signed Steph Curry. They re-signed Kevon Looney. They kept Andrew Wiggins. And boy, did it show up tonight. Andrew Wiggins, with the supreme moment in his career, he was a throw-in in a trade. Other teams would have totally gotten rid of him. They stuck with him. They have a $340 million payroll when you consider taxes. You don't just have to beat the Warriors on the court. You got to beat their checkbook. And nothing away from Andrew Wiggins tonight, but this was a checkbook win for the Warriors.
Windhorst after Game 5. Quite frankly, that's a garbage take. That's one of the worst things I've heard this week. A checkbook win. Did you watch the game? The Celtics were garbage for most of that game, just like that opinion. And the Warriors were the better team. A checkbook win. All these guys were drafted. If you want to talk about like the Miami Heat with LeBron James being a checkbook win for going out and getting Bosh and LeBron, that I could understand. Or even when the Warriors got Durant, I would still disagree with you, but at least you'd have a better case to make. When they got Kevin Durant, and said, oh, it's hard to keep up with them. They're just buying a bunch of talent. This isn't the 90s New York Yankees. Right, for the Yankees, sure. Those World Series in the 90s, what is all baseball fans, unless you're a Yankee fan. Right? The Yankees bought their World Series. They went out and they got Knobloch, and they got Paul O'Neill, and they got Scott Brosius, and they got Cohn and Clemens and Wells, and I could go on and on. They had their core four. The rest of the team was bought. That is a checkbook win. The Warriors, they drafted this team. And Andrew Wiggins, suddenly now we're going to say, well, come on. I mean, they're paying. This is unfair. A $32 million player, Andrew Wiggins. As Windhorst says in that clip, he was like a throw-in. He was a project. Anybody else could have traded for him. They didn't. The Warriors did. It's a credit to Golden State for their development. They drafted Klay, Draymond, Poole, Curry. They've developed Wiggins now into the player we thought he was going to be. And just because they're making a lot of money, yeah, they're making a lot of money to keep him there. Just like other teams can. Just like the Pelicans are going to spend a lot of money to keep Zion Williamson with them. You have the, just like the Bucks spent a lot of money to keep Giannis and the Nuggets with Jokic and the Mavs will with Luka. You have the top priority, right? You can get more money from the team if you stay with them than if you become a free agent. It's what the NBA has done with their salary cap to try to keep stars from leaving. But a checkbook win, that's garbage. That's just trying to write off what the Warriors have done. They're a better team than the Celtics. It's as simple as that. They played better. They played better in Game 5. They've played better in this series. They're the better team. I think they're better coached. I think they executed better in the important moments. They have more playoff experience. I think they have a better player. Their star is better than the Celtics' star. I think the Celtics tried to go small in game five, and it burned them for a large portion of that game. So I thought the X's and O's, the Warriors, were better. I didn't watch that game and think, well, this is just because the Warriors have a higher team salary. I think that's a ridiculous take. And by the way, my theory would be, we've seen Adam Schefter really step in it over the past year because Schefter, a little industry secret, he's really more of just like a puppet for agents. That's how he gets his information. So, of course, you're going to keep the agents happy, right? You scratch their back, they scratch yours. They'll give you information as long as you push some information for them as well. And so Schefter's kind of gotten himself in some trouble when he's put out some apparent reports that's like, oh, yeah, this is clearly coming from an agent. And for Brian Windhorst, we know, right, who's his guy? LeBron James. I wouldn't be surprised if this is something from Clutch Sports. Talking about, well, you got to spend a lot of money to go out and win a championship to try to keep up with the Warriors. You got to spend even more. By the way, we were talking about that movie Hustle. I liked how the agent played by Kenny Smith, he was just like a combination of Rich Paul and Leon Rose. I think his name was like Leon Paul. I think they were Leon Rich. They took the two names and combined them, and he was supposed to be a super agent just like those guys. Rich Paul, who's LeBron's guy, and then Leon Rose, who he's now running like the Knicks, right? But he used to be one of the biggest agents in the NBA. But yeah, I think that's a garbage take. Andrew Wiggins was a trade, and it was seen as a project, and the Warriors kind of got mocked at the time, and now suddenly it's unfair. And the other guys were all drafted by the team and developed. What name on that team was a big free agent signing, right? Ridiculous. But with that said, I take that point, and I apply it to the NFL. Because the Warriors, Windhorst, what he did say was accurate, right, is they are spending $340 million. They are spending a lot of money. And here they are back in the championship. The Rams have spent a lot of money. They just won the Super Bowl. The Mets and Yankees and Dodgers spend the most money in baseball. They have, last I checked, the three best records in baseball. You got to spend money to be successful in sports. And so I bring that back to the Panthers and the Browns. And the Panthers have the richest owner in the NFL. I know there are salary cap restrictions, but the Panthers also have the third most salary cap space. So this takes me back to my other point. When it comes to the Panthers and the Browns, we played that audio last segment of Deshaun Watson. The other storyline with the Browns is, what do you do with Baker Mayfield? Stop with this game of chicken of, well, we're only willing to spend $4 million and not $10 million. If you need a quarterback that bad, that's the price of doing business. Right? Golden State, they want to win championships. They're spending $340 million. The Rams want to win a Super Bowl. They're spending all sorts of money on their guys. And the Panthers, with the richest owner and the third most salary cap space, if they truly believe Baker is an upgrade over Sam Darnold, and I don't think Baker's going to bring some sort of Super Bowl to Carolina, but if he's a better option at the quarterback position, the most important position in sports, and we're haggling over a few million dollars when you have the richest owner and salary cap space, I mean, what are we doing here? And for the Browns, on the flip side, same idea. The Browns have the second most salary cap space. So what are they haggling over money for as well? These are two teams with some of the most money to spend right now, and you have two rich owners with Jimmy Haslam, who scammed a lot of people and got away with it, and look up that story, and David Tepper, who is the richest owner in the NFL, and we're fighting over a few million dollars about the most important position in football. Makes no sense to me. If I'm Carolina, I'm swallowing that price tag if I think it's going to make me better at the quarterback spot, because that's most important. Right, same with the Rams. The Rams, it's like, you know, the salary cap can be like your credit card. You push it off, but eventually those bills are going to come due. And the Rams are saying, that's fine. We may pay for this a few years down the road, but we're going to try to win right now. Golden State Warriors, similar, right? They're spending big and say, this may eventually catch up to us, but we're trying to win. And the Panthers have the money with the owner. They have the money with the salary cap. Why? It's only a one-year contract. Baker becomes a free agent after this offseason or after this upcoming season. I do not get this idea of fighting over a few million. The Browns clearly want Baker gone. The Panthers seem to want him. So just make a deal. Both teams have salary cap space. They're just being stubborn. Sometimes you have to overspend for things. All right, don't be stubborn. When you want to take your family to Disney, don't think like, but that's an expensive price. If you have the money, that was one of the lessons I was always taught, right? If you have the money, have the experience. Because when you look back on the experience and not how much money you actually spent. When you think back to that Disney vacation years ago that you took your kids on, you don't think, it was a great time. The kids had the time of their life. We have so many fond memories. But I probably spent a few hundred dollars more than I should have. What? Who thinks that? You had a great time. It was worth it. If Baker's a better quarterback, it'll be worth it, too, to swallow the price tag a little bit. We'll wrap up Hour 1 next. It's the Mara Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention, campers. Lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Mara Midday Show. Yes,
Mara Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. We'll talk some golf coming up at the top of the hour with Jeremy Schilling as we do every Wednesday. Talk about the U.S. Open, the latest with LIV Golf and the two sides coming together. I'm sure he'll have plenty to say on the topic coming up in just a little bit. Hey, by the way, did you see that Pizza Hut is out as the official pizza sponsor of the NFL? Little Caesars.
Yeah.
That's a big get for Little Caesars.
Hot and ready. Here we go. Let's do it. We got $5 pizzas as the official sponsor of the NFL. Yeah. Are you kidding me, Luke? That's a move right there. Congrats to Little Caesars.
Yeah, because I've always felt like Little Caesars has always been like the second tier. They're the underdog. People don't put them in the same category as a Domino's, Pizza Hut, Papa John's. When you get chain pizza like that, what's your favorite of those? Four, I guess I just listed.
I'd probably have to go classic Domino's. You know, I'm not sure if it's the best pizza, but I feel like it's the fastest and the most easily accessible, if you will. So I would probably say the Domino's, but I love a Little Caesars pizza. They're cheap and they're great. Don't get me wrong.
Yes. I think Little Caesars is really underrated. I think Little Caesars, I don't know. They're a little bit like, not quite as bad as a Nickelback, but like you're embarrassed if you admit you like Nickelback. I feel like there's a bad kind of people are embarrassed when they're eating Little Caesars as opposed to a Domino's or a Papa John's. I love Little Caesars. It's ready for you. There's no wait. You get there. They give it to you. They had that like deep dish. I don't know if they're still doing that or like the real thick crust. Love a good and it's cheap. I used to be a Domino's guy growing up. Now I'm probably more of a Papa John's guy. I don't eat Little Caesars very often, but that's a good spot when you're looking for cheap, quick pizza just to get something to eat. Congrats to Little Caesars taking over the NFL. We'll talk golf next with Jeremy Schilling. It's the Mara Midday Show on ESPN Radio.